This is a top to you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11, oh, 11,
and most of
11,
the
and
amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes, you know, be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is, if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show right here on the Horn. It's Foxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Foxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4 head-on. That's 877-443-2366, or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5453. Yeah. Your host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
Hey, everyone. Welcome aboard Foxed Up here for a Thursday evening, Friday morning, Friday afternoon, if you were I am here in Sydney. And our summer is coming to an end, and what a non-summer it was. You won't get complaints from me. It ain't going to last, but it's probably going to be wet for the next 2 to 3 months here, which is a good thing, but Western Australia continues to burn up. What are we doing? I still can't, you know, I read that email that was forwarded to me, the whole Hussein the Antichrist thing, and I mean, I always knew. I always knew that there were these kind of people out there, but with the way that this kind of stuff gets traction, I think it reminds me how many people now. I'm being told in the chat room that that email has gone around a couple months ago, and that might be the case, but can you imagine, well, I guess you can imagine because it's not far off. But, you know, if Barack Obama pulls off these next couple of states, he'll pretty much have a pretty good stranglehold on the nomination. So then we're into Barack versus McCain. And I think the example of this email will be pale in comparison to what we will see come out when the race is declared to be thus. It's going to be unbelievable. And, you know, there's this just kind of narky, jerky, I think he's a congressman, who he was on Bill Maher's program, and I saw him on a clip on, what's his name, Abrams or whatever, and where he said, you know, they've been using the whole, you know, Barack Hussein Obama thing because they know that it drives the left nuts. Thank you. Bob knew I was talking about. Representative Jack Kingston. What an idiot! On two programs, I watched this guy, and most of you have probably seen this footage. On two programs, I watched the guy go off on the point about Obama not wearing his pledge pin. And whining and moaning about that and his patriotism. And this guy's not wearing his pledge pin either. And this is where I just look at it and say this is nuts. This is surreal. This is not happening. But it's happening. That guy, you know, he earned points for knob end of the month for sure. Pardon me. And he just thinks he's so funny. I sit there and wonder sometimes how Bill Maher can be friends with some of these people. Because this was one of the guys that he said, you know, this is my friend. And I actually think he, you know, in certain situations he means that. And then again, this is the guy that went out with, would you chop up my Nicorette and I'll snort it, woman. Hopefully you've seen that footage. That was funny. Ann Coulter, I think even her side's beginning to see her for the clown that she is. But then again, she still has use. And you tell me, you look at those eyes, and you tell me that someone's not got a bit of a powders issue. Do I dare say it? Oh, I've gone completely sideways. But, you know, I'm watching this whole thing unfold, and it's been going on for so damn long. And we very well could end up with this non-white guy. Either way, we end up with a non-white guy. That's still pretty huge when you think about it. It's, you know, definitely got issues with him on his views, but hey. I think he stands a chance. But then the problem is, I think he walks a dead man's walk. For then on out, at least for a little while, until he gets sorted. And I hate to say that, but I fear for him. Because I think we've got nutty enough people, you know. We got people sent around, you know, things with emails going, this guy's a Muslim and he wants to take over America. And why we can end up having huge amounts of media time about the decision about the candidate who could very well, you know, who in what could very well be the most important election we've had in decades, and turn it into a whole thing about whether or not you're wearing the pledge pin.
What's that on your chest, mister?
It's a pledge pin, sir.
A pledge pin on your uniform!
I remember when Barack Obama was asked about the pin thing, and I thought he made a statement that would have rung with a lot of people. And I don't know, going off on a major tangent. I just think it's could be weird times if this guy gets in. I'm not saying that I don't think he'd do a fine job, but I think we'd see wackos come out like we haven't seen wackos come out in a long, long time. Because we do have this dirty little pocket of America, don't we, still? Really dirty, you know, hateful. Pathetic kind of we fear anything other than what I know or what my God has told me. Yee! But anyway, it's Friday, which means, it's not Friday, it's Thursday, dough. And that means Mr. Billy Shear's music. I should have gotten into this before I got into the tirade. And this one's been actually on the cards for a couple of weeks, but for various reasons we haven't had Thursday shows. So, we're finally getting to it, Bill. Sorry. This is about, I dig this woman, Sheryl Crow, who has done the I think the long, slow, credible climb. Could be interesting. He's supposedly got some stuff about, you know, when she worked for Michael Jackson, but I wouldn't expect much. There's pretty solid wall of silence when it comes to that camp. So, but anyway, should be interesting. So, without further ado, Mr. Billy Shears and Sheryl Crow. Roll it, Bob.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Sheryl Crow is a 9-time Grammy Award winner, and in addition to her successful music career, she is also a noted political activist. Crow was born in Missouri. Her father was a trumpet player and a lawyer, her mother a piano teacher. Sheryl Crow also taught elementary school music and sang in bands on the weekends. She also sang in jingles for McDonald's and Toyota. In fact, her McDonald's commercials earned her $50,000 alone. Then she caught a break and hooked up with Michael Jackson.
Well, that wasn't the first thing I ever did, but that was the biggest thing that I had done up until that point. I toured with him on the Bad Tour as a backing singer. It was interesting, you know, because I'd just moved to L.A. I was still from a really small town. And I'd never been out of my own country. In fact, I'd barely been out of my hometown. And we toured all over the world. We played for audiences of, you know, 90,000 people. And it was kind of crazy. It was too long. It was 18 months of touring. And Michael is, you know, he's not like every other performer in that he's so huge that he basically didn't learn anyone's names and was just like working for someone you never saw. So, you know, it's kind of odd. I think everyone has to sign a contract when they work with him not to write a book, you know, about what goes on behind the scenes or whatever. But I would have very little to say about it anyway, really.
Well,
Sheryl Crow talks about the time Walmart banned her album for lyrics about selling guns.
Watch your sister, watch your brother, watch your children while they kill each other with a gun they bought at Walmart discount stores.
Yeah, no, they're not selling it. There's a lyric in one of my songs that says, that mentions the fact that Walmart sells guns, which is true, and they didn't like that. They didn't like the fact that I pointed out the fact that guns have been used in wrongful death situations with kids younger than 21. And it is true, and I guess they just, you know, couldn't stand the truth. The unfortunate thing about it is that it certainly doesn't make Walmart look too great. And for me, I lose about $500,000 in sales, so $500,000 copies. So, you know, it is a big deal because what it does is that when Walmart comes into a small town and they put out all the small mom-and-pop-owned stores like the record store, and the only place you can get your record is at Walmart, well, there's nothing I can do about it. They offered that I could change the lyric, but I'm not going to do that. And, you know, I speak about it in the press. I talk about it in interviews. And there's, outside of that, my mission is not to go and pick a big fight with Walmart. I think they shouldn't sell guns, and I think they should, you know, choose to sell music over selling artillery. But it's their decision, and there's nothing I can do about it.
Politicians on a mission, bring them up, bring them down for the good of the system. Well, we don't like the way you live your life. I got one thing I must express, try out someone else in the press. Justice is a fading light. Mary, Mary, quick and scary, close your door now, it's much too scary. Yeah, you might see something you wish you hadn't seen. Out of sight, out of time, out of patience, and I'm out of my mind.
Born a poor young country boy, Mother Nature's son. All day long I'm sitting singing songs for everyone.
Here, Crow talks about her experience in Bosnia.
It was really interesting. You know, it was very impactful. And when I got home, it took me, a few weeks to really digest what all I'd seen. We try to make friends, and the best way to get to know the feel of a town or of a country is to hang out with its people, not necessarily, going to museums and all that, although we do that too. But when in Bosnia, we flew through the countryside in helicopters, and you really see firsthand what war does to terrain, to villages, to people, to neighbors. As Americans, we don't really experience war, at least on our home turf. We haven't experienced it not in my lifetime. So we get desensitized to watching it on TV, and it was very, very alarming. And it's frustrating to watch people dying in front of the camera lens and thinking, why is this happening?
was asked how she thought her new album at the time, titled If It Makes You Happy, how she thought it was doing. And I thought she had a very interesting answer.
I think it's doing well. I got to be honest, I don't really keep up with it because it is annoying to me. Well, I just, you know, I think if you get really bogged down in how well you're doing, the slightest bit of movement downward can start to alarm you, and it's just not a healthy place to be. The best place for me to be is to have my head in the music as opposed to in the charts. I hope people like it, you know, but outside of that, I can't, there's nothing I can do about it.
If it makes you happy, it can't be that bad. If it makes you happy, then why the hell are you so sad?
Now here's Sheryl Crow with one of her most popular hits, All I Want to Do.
It ain't no country club either. This is LA. All I want to do is have a little fun before I die. There's a man next to me out of nowhere. Apropos of nothing, he says his name is William. I'm sure he's Bill or Billy or Mac or Buddy. And he's played ugly to me. And I wonder if he's ever had a day of fun in his whole life. We are drinking beer at noon on Tuesday. The bar that faces a giant car wash.
This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Well, and thanks for that, Billy. Sorry it was a couple weeks coming. And, you know, talk about a bass line making a song. And I was listening to it, and thinking, you know, what the hell is he playing? And part of me is thinking fretless and actually probably stand-up bass. But there's this slight electric sound at a moment. And I'm wondering, did they double it with two bass players? No, because this is all kind of recorded live. So, I don't know, maybe one of those upright stick kind of things. But it's a really, really growly, great noise. It's awesome. The song's also a great, great example of just space and a bit of syncopation, because it moves. So, anyway. Let's see, what do we have? Kind of moving on, and, you know, if you got something to, you want to bring into the conversation, feel free to call in 1-877-443-2366, and I'm just going to go through some stuff. It's a bit bit of an underprepared day, but I do have a few stories. And the World Watch Institute has a piece. This is via insnet.org. And keep talking about the solar geothermal vibe that I've got. Well, more and more thinking the same thing. Here it says, yet another renewable technology concentrating solar power may be ready for the explosive growth that has marked solar photovoltaic and wind power systems in recent years. CSP, a utility-scale technology ideally suited to desert areas, is resurging around the world, with major facilities being built or planned in the U.S. Southwest, Spain, North Africa, Peru, Chile, and even Germany, while Susan Moran and J. Thomas McKinnon, in the March-April issue of the World Watch magazine in the United States, a perfect storm of influence, especially growing public concern about coal. Mm-hmm. See, the coal's days are numbered. Another reason why I think mountaintop removal has a chance is people are figuring this out. And so then maybe the push will be on for something pretty major, pretty quick, and I still reckon this is it. Out of everything that I've seen, public concern about coal, new venture capital, high oil prices, and state renewable energy mandates is positioning CSP to become a much bigger part of the energy mix. CSP delivers power in the middle of the day when demand is typically highest, and CSP facilities can be equipped with thermal storage capacity that enables them to supply off-peak power long after the sun has gone down. Costs are currently around 17 cents per megawatt hour, but Moran and McKinnon cite one set of projections suggesting the cost could drop to 8 cents a kilowatt hour with experience. Department of Energy research grants have been awarded to 9 U.S. companies in an effort to bring the cost down to 7 cents a kilowatt hour by 2020. Although Congress has failed to extend a solar investment tax credit earlier this year, many U.S. states are more sympathetic. In California, for instance, several utilities have signed power purchase agreements with builders of CSP facilities. So this is another name of what I think is basically the same as that whole SPEGS system, which is, you know, solar during the day, capture the excess energy, circulate it back at night using good old tested technology like steam turbines. It's really simple. And I know I go on about this, but really, if there's a technology out there, out of everything that I've looked at and read about that has a chance for large scale and is already doing large scale. In Spain, I believe there's one in California already up and running. They're talking about this design that was used in Spain, actually set them up in the middle of the Middle Eastern desert and set up just a huge cable to power England. That's the kind of potential that they think that it has. Sounds like it could make the lowly coal-fired power plant seem like a bit of a wuss. And it can be used in so many different applications, locations. It's easily adaptable from everything that I've read so far. I know that no one thing is going to get us out of it, but this could be a huge, you know, in less than a decade, could, I think, probably fairly easily, take over most of the base load power generation for most of the world. So, more grants, more money. Let's get on this bandwagon. It's a good idea. And I think it's a good idea to take a break, Bob. We'll come back and I'll see what else I might be able to pull out. So you're listening to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network, everyone. Come back and I got a mountaintop removal story. And you're listening to The Horn, the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice. And we'll be right back.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. With the economy screeching to a halt and with foreclosures increasing at a frightening pace, we need to come to grips with a basic fact. This fabled free market system of ours isn't what it's cracked up to be. We need regulation of industry. If we'd had decent regulation, we wouldn't be in this foreclosure mess. The Fed was asleep at the wheel, and Congress gave the financial industry carte blanche. As a result, a couple million homeowners are losing everything. We also need public investment, not just private investment. Bush's refund checks won't do nearly enough. As Jesse Jackson has pointed out, people don't need gift certificates for Walmart, which, by the way, will primarily help China and one wealthy family in Arkansas. What people need is good jobs. But Bush and the Republicans refuse to go along with any public sector spending on employment. As a result, a severe recession is in the offing. And no amount of monkeying with interest rates by the Fed now will be able to pull the economy out of this free fall. Until we have in Washington leaders who don't worship daily at the altar of cowboy capitalism, this, unfortunately, is what we can expect. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
I never thought my daughter and I would ever think the same thing is cool.
At home, my boys are like a wrecking ball. But when they volunteer, they're actually shaping things up.
Hey, they planted trees at the local park. Clean the place up.
She makes new friends. She has a great time.
My son loves it. He's contributing.
These are nice kids.
The Are You Into It volunteer program is a great way for you and your kids to make a difference in the community while making friends. So, if you're into it, or you think your kid might be, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH. Or visit our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
We can't get him to clean his room, but he loves volunteering.
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
cool drums going out and coming back. Moving on. That's just, yeah. Nice blow fade. Ah, beautiful engineer in there, Bob. You know, after 14 hours, you get the hang of things. You know I'm just kidding. Narf. No, that was nice. And our little telephony software actually held up through it. I won't repeat that. Anyway, again, here, more of the another one of those little signs of hope why I think mountaintop removal is going to finally see its day, and coal may even begin to see its day, is from the Metro Pulse, metropulse.com, their feature story by Rick Heald. Local evangelical Christians join environmentalists in an unlikely union to fight mountaintop removal mining in Tennessee. And they do the intro. Pat Hudson gathers with a small group of Christian church leaders on a ridge overlooking a flattened mountain that was once higher than where they stand. On this trip to a sacrifice zone in the heart of the Kentucky coal country, they have heard the dire statistics and the bleak stories of the area families whose faucets run with poisonous water, whose children suffer from breathing disorders, and whose homes no one will buy. But it is looking down on the moonscape that once was a lush Appalachian mountain that brings on anguish and tears, an unavoidable as if standing before the open casket at the funeral of a beautiful child. And as if at a funeral, Pat Hudson and her fellow Christians lean on their faith and each other to begin to sing Amazing Grace. Pat's pastor, John Gill, of Knoxville's Church of the Savior, United Church of Christ, was also on the ridge that day to witness firsthand the after effects of mountaintop removal coal mining, which has been described as strip mining on steroids. Pat and her friend Dawn Capcock will never forget sitting in church the following Sunday when from the pulpit John described what he saw and said simply, "This is sin." I love this. Pat and I looked at each other, and the question that came to us that day, I'm not sure who asked it out loud first, was, "How can we make this stop?" It was a familiar question for Kathy Lindquist, though she was no longer around in the flesh to help answer it. Kathy, who died of cancer in 2005, was a youth leader at the Church of the Savior and also a passionate opponent of the literal removal of mountains to extract coal from Appalachia. See, I think this is a great sign of how this issue, when brought out into the open with people of all stripes. I mean, I couldn't probably be further most of the time from an evangelical Christian, but if they see on this, more power to them. I'll walk with them. She continues here saying, "She saw her work in protecting the environment as an extension of her Christian faith," says Hudson. "We are all inspired by Kathy's spirit, so the church resolved to continue her work. And so, with congregational acclaim, Hudson and Capock funded the Lindquist Environmental Appalachian Fellowship, LEAF, an East Tennessee incarnation of creation care, a burgeoning national movement of Christian called to take biblically based stands for environmental stewardship." Ah, they remember that bit. How nice of them. How nice of them. Uh, they continue on. What is also burgeoning is the demand for Tennessee coal, residing under the ridges of the Eastern Mountains and the Cumberland Plateau. And as oil prices climb, so does the demand for alternative fossil fuel, another huge source of greenhouse gas emissions into an already overheated global atmosphere. While Tennessee, unlikely Kentucky and West Virginia, has largely escaped the worst effects of mountaintop removal, coal mining for now, coal companies are poised to dramatically increase the number of MTR sites in this state. Did I follow that right? They're saying there that West Virginia had... I thought West Virginia was one of the worst hit, Bob. Am I wrong? Or is it... Yeah, I'll go back. As oil prices climb, so does the demand for this alternative fossil fuel, another huge source of greenhouse gas emissions into an already overheated global atmosphere. While Tennessee, unlike Kentucky and West Virginia, has largely escaped the worst. Ah, sorry, I misinterpreted it. Okay, no, that's fine. Tennessee has escaped mostly. Mountaintop removal coal mining for now. Coal companies are poised to dramatically increase the number of MTR sites in this state, with more than a dozen mining permits pending also. The Tennessee Valley Authority's huge investment in smokestack scrubbers for their coal-burning power plants has created an even greater incentive to extract its own coal reserves under the ridges for its vast holdings in the Royal Blue Tract between Caryville and Oneida. Pronoun trouble. Said Daffy Duck. Pronoun trouble, I see. Bob got me. If this is kind of... since this seems to be hitting a new area, a whole new bunch of people to be outraged. So I think I misread it the first time, Nanette, in the chat room. They're saying that they have escaped it for the most part, unlike West Virginia. Yeah. Huh. I don't know. What else do they have in here? Because you're just kind of going through this with me. Welcome along for the ride. They say, but in the era of Al Gore, record warm winters, scorching summers, and extended drought in Tennessee, a handful of East Tennessee Christians have emerged to take grassroots action against climate change and the ravaging of their mountains. Taking the lead in development and trying to pass the first legislation in the country that would ban mountaintop removal mining, they are adding a dash of religious fervor to a sometimes stale bipartisan coalition of legislators who may actually pull it off in a sometimes stale, sometimes stalled General Assembly. Strip mining on steroids. Coal companies in Appalachia first began blowing up mountains in the 1970s as a way to ramp up conventional strip mining techniques, enabling more complete removal of coal seams while greatly reducing the number of workers required to do it. Funny that. Compared to conventional methods, flattening a mountain to get at the coal within is a multi-layered process. It begins with clear-cutting the native hardwood forests on the ridgetop to better facilitate blasting away the earth underneath. Isn't it just such a pretty little picture they paint? First, they just chop it all down. It kills me. It kills me. The thought that this happens on a daily basis, basically. Huge, huge amounts of explosives used to flatten what was and part still is, you know, one of the most beautiful places in North America. And for not only just the damage, but the lack of run-on benefit to the local communities compounding on top of all of it. It has to come to an end. And I really think that this is one of those issues where it doesn't matter your political stripe. If you actually see what it does, you cannot say that it's a good idea. And why are we doing this in our own backyard? I mean, the whole concept of just raping the very country that you, whose flag you wave so high, and just say, yeah, level it. We need the coal. Level it. Take it out. We don't need no darn mountains. Yeah, Bob, China needs the coal. And see, this is where Australia is the largest supplier of coal to Australia. Look at where we are. Half of the problems that, like, the infrastructure problems that they talk about here, you know, and they, because there's not as many of them, they don't quite get as much airtime as they should, is the ports can't get ships out any faster than they do now. So China increases its demand. This is, again, China wanting to invest in these coal companies, in BHP. They want to inject the cash for them to push for the investment of more port infrastructure so that they can get more loads of coal. I mean, they seriously cannot move it any faster than it's going. So, you know, you can't blame China for its moves, but I do find them creepy if they continue. At the moment, they're, oh, you know, maybe kind of smart. But they go for any more of this, and supposedly it's cooled down, but I think they're waiting to see what happens with the Australian merger with the other outfit. Rio Tinto, that's it. And this one I'm still getting my head around, where an Australian-based mining company can trade its shares simultaneously on the UK Stock Exchange and the Australian. So, as though not to raise alarm bells in Australia, we'll go and buy our interest in this company via the UK, and, you know, even if they find out the next day, it's done deal, deal done. You wouldn't want to look like a crybaby now, would you? Asking questions. And we've got our own, you know, bit of stock market weirdies, you know, ABC Learning Centers. This one chain runs one third of the daycare in this country. And they recently, in one day, lost like almost 70% of their share value. And over the last 4 months had gone from, you know, pretty stellar to pretty nothing, and it had to do with U.S. exposure. Debt levels, again. And lower than expected income, which, with parents lining up out the door just to get online to apply in Australia. How that's possible, I don't understand. But this one company, if it were to go down, one third of the child care centers in Australia could just go. But there, where it gets interesting is a couple of their, you know, their CEOs and whatnot sold off $19 million of their own shares. One guy, 24 hours before the price crashed.
Ooh.
Who's being a bad boy? Who's using insider information now? And then comes in the sloth of them all, the slug. The shares they sold were leveraged. Yes, that's right. Leveraged. On another development consortium. And they're still trying to figure that one out. But yeah, the China coal China thing. It's like politicians and the addiction to the tax on tobacco. It is going to be breaking an addict to get a fundamental change, but it's going to have to come. At some point, there's just not going to be any more. But hopefully, we will have enough left to get it kind of kicked over. And then we keep working on more and more efficient ways to produce energy, store energy, reuse energy. Yeah, that whole reuse thing. Reuse. I don't know, I'm battling at this point. But, you know, I think you're on a winner of a movement there if you end up getting environmentalists and born-again fundamentalist evangelical Christians together. And taking on that, it's actually quite a long piece. I'll put the link in the chat room. Tells the whole story in great detail. But I really think that this is something that has a chance of getting real traction, and then that helps to open up the greater environmental cause. I don't know. Crazy, maybe. See, but I reckon really easy. Over 10 years, you replace all the coal-powered generators with geothermal plants. You've already got the turbines sitting right there. I bet you could set it up, retrofit, and then build new ones. And if you can do it for seven cents a kilowatt, rockin'. That's like below the magic number, I think. I think the magic number might be something like 12. But see, I also think that's going to get easier because people are using less. They're seeing that it's more expensive. Rationing, self-rationing. People are remembering to turn gadgets off and unused lights off. And it actually collectively does make a difference. It does look like a moonscape. When you look at these areas that have been just absolutely devastated by mountaintop removal mining, they're just killer. They'll just kill you. Amazing. So anyway, folks, thanks for hanging with us for another week. And thanks to Bob for producing. Thanks to Ben Birch of the White Rose Society for the streaming and the archives. Thanks to Scott Berry at B1 Louder Productions.
Now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. It seems sometimes when talking about various prejudices in the world,